Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and this is going to be an unusual show because it's about an incredible novel that I read that is so beautiful and important in our lives. So I've asked the author to be on the show, and this is about a pope, a female pope. Now, what are they going to think of next? Right, Peter? Peter Canova, the author of Pope Annalisa.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Good morning. I really enjoyed your book. It's a great read on so many levels, for many of us on a spiritual level, but also it's a great read because it's so full of action. I love action books. And this is, you just chew every page. It's so enjoyable to read through it and learn from it as well, and you have so many insights, and it's exciting to understand this concept that you're presenting that changes the church.
Well, spirituality doesn't have to be boring, and the book has, I think the source of the book's popularity is really exactly what you cited for those people who are spiritually aware, spiritually oriented. There's a lot in there for them to think about, but by the same time, the story itself is a powerful story, and some people read it just for that alone. So it's a book that can be read at several different levels.
Right, and so I think for so many readers out there, a lot of us, I have to read books every week for my show, and some of them are enjoyable reads, and some of them are very important reads, but I have to work my way through them. And this book, I just enjoyed so much. It was, occasionally I get a chance to read some action novel, and I'm happy about that. And here I got to actually read one for my show.
Great. I'm glad it worked out for you.
Yeah. And it's fascinating, the story about a black African woman born to a Muslim mother and what happens to her along the way, and actually who she really is. Why would a woman like that become pope?
Well, I think, first of all, if there ever was even such a thing as a female priest in the Catholic Church, it would excite a lot of people. I think there's a really, yearning for that, because why should that avenue of spiritual expression be closed to females? It just doesn't make any sense. It never really has made any sense. And in fact, it was never that way in the beginning. The early Christian church was full of female leaders. And in fact, if you look at the recovered gospels, the Gnostic gospels that they found at Nag Hammadi, Egypt in 1945, it clearly demonstrates that women were in major leadership role, and that Mary Magdalene was the primary disciple of Jesus. So, as far as the whole angle of Africa, and that pope being an African nun, there were several reasons for that. One of which was I lived in Africa for a number of years, and so I was kind of in tune with that particular culture there. But I think what it really had to do was the fact that in order to really talk about a spiritual transformation of an institution that's been exclusively male for 2,000 years, you really kind of had to go to the opposite side of the spectrum and say, okay, how would the female spirituality, affect that whole superstructure of the Catholic Church? And then again, the Church is built on a very elaborate theology, very complex and elaborate theology, which actually, if most people even took time to want to bother to look at it, it would probably blow their circuits out. In Africa, they're much closer to worshiping nature. It's really a more simple form of understanding spiritual matters, and it cuts through a lot of the stuff that the whole superstructure of Western theology, you know, has really created a lot of obscurities, and the African way of looking at things, I think, you know, just kind of cuts to the chase. So, you know, for several reasons, I wanted the main character in the book to be a female and to be African.
Well, it's amazing what you talk about the Gnostics and how Western civilization has become so estranged from the roots. And it feels to me, reading this and then reading your notes at the end about your thoughts about it all, it's understandable that the early days, thousands of years ago, people were more enlightened in those days. They, because society didn't try to box them in the way we're being boxed in on all sides now, by corporations, by the medical world, the economy. There's so many ways that we're, and certainly the church, that we're not given the opportunity to think for ourselves and to act for ourselves. And so when we look at the Gnostics from the old days, they were very advanced in today's thinking. And why is that so advanced now? We should be more advanced than they were. But
The fact of the matter is that for a person to really be independent in life and, you know, to have, you know, what we call, you know, the highest degree of freedom they can, the answers will never come from institutions, from man-made institutions, because man-made institutions aren't the rule of nature. They're not the foundation of our being. The foundation of our being comes from another dimension. It comes from the energetic dimension of spirit, which most people throughout history have never been in touch with, and they haven't, because the whole story of this world is essentially about that spiritual energy being lost in materiality, and the belief in materiality, that the reality kind of begins and ends at the boundaries of our skin. And enlightenment really is when a person gets to the point where they realize that that is not the foundation of all being, that's just the superstructure, and that the foundation itself lies in spirit and spiritual understanding. And those people, I think, who have taken time to delve into that inner spiritual world come out with realizations that often contradict what we are told by institutions. And institutions, of course, take on their own life. I always say that, prophets speak the heart of God. Their followers start religions, because every person themselves really has to be a prophet in order to truly understand, the higher perceptions in life. And when people start to become followers rather than leaders in and of themselves for their own lives, that's when we get a little bit lost, because we have a lot of, frankly, a lot of BS out there that's going to get laid on us. And if we don't have a foundation to separate the wheat from the chaff, it makes our lives that much more difficult.
Well, thank God for Pope Annalisa.
Hopefully that will help some people.
Yes. I mean, I think that she cuts right to the quick by when she takes over as Pope. Her edicts are quite fascinating and freeing of the world, because it's not just about the church with her. She was collective minded. Now, the church to me is very tribal, and a lot of society is very tribal nowadays, which means us against them, and tribe is always your own tribe, whoever that you might identify that as. And she was extremely collective conscious, and not only on this plane. What was interesting to me was that she was universally collective.
She saw the whole as opposed to seeing the parts. And that actually is, you know, part of the reason I made her female, because it was really the feminine spiritual principle. You know, the ancients really viewed the world as a yin and yang, which they called male and female. These are the two sort of polar forces that the one unity operates through in the material world, this polarity. It's only a polarity in appearance. It's not a polarity in fact, because everything in fact is one energy. But in terms of how it appears and how it affects us in this world, it seems to operate as these polar forces of male and female. And on the female side, you see, the female side is feeling, is heart, it's intuition. It tends to look at the whole rather than the parts. The male side is analytical, it's logical, tends to want to break things down and look at the parts rather than the whole. And that is the predominant nature of our world today, the sort of male or patriarchal view in most societies. Annalisa was coming from the other side of the spectrum. She understood the whole, and then she understood the parts and the context of the whole, so she had a big advantage over many others who couldn't see the forest for the trees.
Right, and our language about spirituality has been shaped by religion in so many ways, and we're trying to move beyond that. So Pope Annalisa was very brave. and yet what's nice is the way you shape it is through spirit, and she really had so much of spirit on her side, and the forces of the universe seemed to appreciate what she was doing. And you yourself are a strong meditator, and as you said, a lot of the book, good part of the book comes from your own meditation.
Yeah, it is a combination of my own thoughts that were channeled through meditation, but always actually proved out in the so-called physical world. In other words, I'm always reluctant. I get a lot of information, but I'm always reluctant to talk about it unless I can, you know, I've seen an analog of it in the physical world, unless I can, you know, actually point to its operation in a practical way. Otherwise, you can't really expect people to believe it's anything other than a figment of your own imagination. So to the extent that I did have my own information there to supplement the voluminous research that I did, it was always channeled information that proved itself out, because I, being a Capricorn, I'm actually a pretty practical person. I'm not airy fairy out there and, you know, just kind of spewing out whatever, you know, runs through my head. So I wanted this book to be of very practical value to people, and so I was very careful in terms of what sort of information that I derive from my own subjective experience that I would put in there.
Well, no, I appreciate that. It's very important to understand that when we work intuitively, it has to make sense. I'm a practicing intuitive and have been for many, many years, and the last thing I want to do is make a fool of myself. So everything has to prove itself out in very practical ways. And be of value. Otherwise, what the sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so what you put together. I mean, you're an incredible writer, and as well as a philosopher, and I so enjoyed the way you mapped out the story and the adventure, all the intrigue. In the church and the hierarchy and the other pope, the other cardinals and who wanted to be pope and how much excitement there is in the book of dastardly deeds.
Well, you know, this is really a book of epic dimensions, and I don't think there's anything grander in life that you can speak of than the origin, purpose, and destiny of humanity. And that's really what this book is about. Of course, the other side of that coin is that you could get so abstract about that that you really dilute your story. So, you know, the trick there was to do justice to these themes, but in a practical sense that people could live and breathe and feel through the lives of the character, so that it didn't, you know, become, you know, such an abstract work that it would be very hard to relate to.
No, you made everybody very human in so many diverse ways. So many different kinds of characters are in the book. The bad guys are really bad guys. The good guys are wonderful, and you cheer for them.
Well, actually, so it's interesting, though, but when you really think of it, some of the bad guys are really bad guys, like the character of Alvaro, the head of the Militas Domini organization, that kind of sinister organization. And yet the other character, Mannheim, in the book, who was the chief opponent of Annalisa, wasn't really such a bad guy.
Right.
He operated out of his own convictions and his own beliefs, even though they may have been misdirected. And of course, that's what destroyed him in the end. But let's say him as compared to an Alvaro, who would be more purely what we would call evil, because he was greedy, he was power hungry, and Mannheim's tragic flaw was more his pride than anything else.
And he was diluted by the dogma of the church. I mean, he couldn't understand these new concepts.
He understood them. He would not accept them. It was anathema to him. This was counter to. She represented something counter to everything he and traditional, the traditional Catholic Church, was really taught to believe.
Right, and the pride of his ego got in the way because he really did want to be Pope.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his tragic flaw really was his pride. That was really his downfall. He was actually quite a brilliant guy. He acted out of principle. He was brave when he was just a priest in East Germany, and he stood up to the communist authorities over there. But he did it all for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and you brought him through to a logical conclusion, and I felt good about that in the book. I think everything, it reads in such beautiful ways because your emotions are being pulled right and left with all these characters and all the stories around them. And the main theme of, as you said, a theme of that's so monumental as this is important because it's so much of the history of the last couple thousand years.
The emotion in the book was very important because I think as a writer, or as an author, your real goal is to make an emotional connection with your readers. And, really these things, these emotional aspects of the book were really aspects of my own experience, my own struggles, my own doubts, my own growth. I'm like any other human being. These are all emotions and things that are common to us. They may manifest through different circumstances in different ways, but the underlying principle, the underlying struggle of us trying to understand and our humanity and realize maybe the divinity within inside us. These are struggles that at some level, consciously or unconsciously, we all go through. And I think that's what people pick up on. That quality of understanding, that struggle, is what people pick up on because it's happened in their own lives day by day.
Well, I think these are changing times. We're in 2012, and it's a time of transformation on all levels, including the world of religion, the world of politics, the economy, the ecology. So many things have to change now, and we all know it. We're all in it. Everybody's frustrated. So to read a book that actually handles it, at least on the church level, it challenges what we all want to challenge and has the hero to actually win with.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that for people listening here, a couple of things. First of all, that this is not a Catholic book by any stretch of the imagination. The Catholic Church is merely a vehicle that's used to tell a universal story. It's the Catholic Church really, represents the traditional ways that we're brought up with concepts that kind of box us in, that limit, that maybe limit our inquiry, limit our potential to grow. And it's not saying that the Catholic Church is bad at all. I mean, one of the reasons why a lot of religious people read this book is because it's not a church-bashing or it's not a Christian-bashing book by any stretch of the imagination. What it really says is that, look, Christianity or the traditional religions, any traditional religion, has given us a basis of understanding certain concepts, but it shouldn't be that we just stop there and we're limited there. That should be just the beginning of our journey. So they've given us the beginning of the journey. Where I think that the traditional religions kind of go off track is when they say, well, wait a minute, this is it. This is the whole story. This is the be-all and the end-all. So, you know, don't go any further in your quest. And I think that's where the detrimental part of organized religion comes in. So it's both respectful of organized religion while it recognizes the limitations of it. And I might also say to people that are listening that if you're, as we're talking, if you want to get more information, I have a website, popeannalisa.com, popeannalisa.com, and it's got a lot of videos, information, and good insights that you may want to check out.
Right. And the thing about this is that it's an opportunity to think differently, to understand the spiritual quest, and again, it's about promoting the spiritual quest rather than attacking the church. Although it's anything that I think doesn't adhere to dogma is heresy, and this is a very heretical book. Pope Annalisa was a heretic.
She would be probably considered by the traditional Catholic Church a heretic, yes.
Right. Teresa of Avila was a heretic, and mm-hmm. she was sainted.
mm-hmm.
It was, it's a time. I've had Matthew Fox on the show. He's a Christian heretic. Mm-hmm. We need heretics on every level nowadays, and so it's beautiful to read. And as you say, it's not directed at the church. It's actually directed at wherever there is dogma, and dogma can be in any part of life.
Oh, and it is in every part of life. In the scientific community, who, you know, of course, it's kind of funny because, you know, a lot of scientists have kind of looked down on religion as, you know, this sort of primitive vestige of civilization, and yet there's just as much orthodoxy in the scientific community, or in the medical community for that matter, as there is in any church, believe me.
Oh, no, hopefully you'll write a book about it someday, because you do a good job. It's amazing what we need to accomplish. I think this is a year part of it is because 2012 has been promoted as the end of time and perhaps the beginning of time, and because of that, I think we're all vested in change, and so to read a book that has so much change in it, so powerfully written and beautifully written, is an opportunity to satisfy us at this time.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think 2012. My suspicion is that 2012 is really going to be the year for this book. When I put it out, actually about 18 months ago, and the story was kind of interesting. It almost been picked up by HarperCollins to be published, but I guess it missed by like one vote in their acquisition committee, and then we started sliding into a bad economy, and so I made the judgment that an epic novel by a first-time author wasn't going to go anywhere with any publisher, because they were pulling in their horns and just, you know, going with their old tried-and-true formulas. So I self-published the book, and, fortunately, it got recognition. It won 7 National Book Awards in less than a year, and that helped. It's been a long struggle, a long campaign to bring awareness of the book out there. And right now, there's a couple things working on it. There's a big publishing concern that's actually perhaps looking at taking over the book. And also, I've got about 3 or 4 different serious movie producers, who are talking to me about making a movie out of it. And I have a feeling that 2012 may be the year when this whole project gets on the map. which is great because, you know, at the end of the day, I wrote this book because I wanted it to help people, and I just didn't want it to help people who thought of themselves as spiritual. I feel that this book has the possibility of becoming a cultural phenomenon, which means it's a work that could be understood and embraced at a number of different levels, not just for those who consider themselves, you know, the spiritually elite, but I think people at all walks of life are kind of thirsting for an alternative vision, and I think that this is a book that that can really help them.
That's interesting because I know that it was out and that you've been moving it along and it's building momentum, and yet to me when I'm holding it, actually I'm sitting here holding it in my hand, I feel like I'm holding gold. And I do think it's a monumental book that should be in the millions of sales, and because it's valuable, and as I said, it's very satisfying. It's a journey that we all need to be on at this time, and to see why. And this book shows us that also the writing, the prose is beautiful. It's so easy to enjoy, and so I'm so hardly recommending it, but I do believe that what you're saying, that it's going to have its own momentum, and people will understand the gold value of it.
Yeah, hopefully, like I say, this will be the year for the book.
Yes, and for you too, and future too, because I know there are more books that are based on this concept.
Well, this is actually book one of a trilogy called The First Soul, and the trilogy is really about just what it says. It's about the first souls to incarnate into physical experience from the realm of spirit. These are the cardinal souls that led the fall from the realm of the one consciousness into the appearance of the many. And their story is our story. It's the story of, a monumental change in perception, of getting lost in the dream of life, and of finding one's way back to our spiritual home.
That's wonderful. I guess, well, the next book is more about Mary Magdalene, and that's what's so helpful about Pope Annalisa, is that she does represent that energy of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, the second book is called The 13th Disciple, and it actually kind of cuts back and forth in time between the first soul's important incarnations in the Holy Land during the time of Christ, and then it also gets back into the present time of Pope Annalisa, and it kind of shows the arc of these souls, not just the arc of these people, but the arc of their soul growth, during these important incarnations, and that book also talks a lot about the lost feminine, the spirituality, the recovery of the feminine spirituality, and it's a book that's really going to deal with Annalisa birthed a spirituality, but birthing something and sustaining it and it's continuing life are two different things, and in this book they're kind of struggling to consolidate all the things that Annalisa started.
Well, the depth of your writing in terms of spiritual understandings is all here, and I think people will appreciate that. It's not only a story, but it gets to the depths of who we believe our souls are and where we come from, and it's very satisfying in that way as well. Peter Canova, I want to thank you first of all for writing this book and for being on the show. Appreciate you being on Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's wonderful talking with you, and I wish you great luck with this. I want it to be in so many people's hands.
Thank you. I just to say in closing one more time, if people can visit my website, popeannalisa.com, and there's a lot of information on there. There's a way where you can buy the book, and also the book is available through Amazon and any of the online booksellers, or can be ordered in any of the bookstores.
That's terrific. Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And all the best. Right.
Bye.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. You can visit my website, heartriver.org, at Heart River Center. And I'm Peter at heartriver.org, email address. And thank you so much for listening.